listening to a Sharesies podcast.
Kia ora, this is an audio version of Shared Lunch, Sharesies' weekly live stream conversation between experts, CEOs, and you.
Kia ora, welcome to Shared Lunch, brought to you by Sharesies with Business Desk. Now, Sharesies is a wealth development platform whose purpose is to create financial empowerment for everyone. My name is Frances Cook. I'm the investments editor at Business Desk. Now, we do have a special offer for Sharesies investors from Business Desk. If you use the promo code SHAREDLUNCH100, that's all one word, SHAREDLUNCH100, you'll get $100 off an annual subscription to Business Desk, usually $249, including GST. Now, the offer does only apply to new Business Desk subscribers, can only be used once per subscriber, and can't be used with any other discounts. Now, before we get started, here's some important information. Investing involves risk. You might lose the money you start with. We recommend talking to a licensed financial advisor. We also recommend reading product disclosure documents before deciding to invest. Everything you're about to see and hear is current at the time of recording. Also, just a quick reminder, if you have any questions for our guests today, please do submit them through the Ask a Question button down below. Don't leave questions in the discussion area. They're likely to get missed. I don't want to miss them. You guys always have great questions. So Ask a Question button down below. Get amongst. Please do be kind and respectful towards our guest and your fellow viewers. Otherwise, we will unfortunately take steps to remove you from the webinar. Now, today we're joined by Andrew Balgani. He is the Chief Revenue Officer for Trade Window. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Frances. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. It's lovely to have you on today. Now, tell me about Trade Window. What do you do? What do you not do?
Right. Well, Trade Window is a software company that provides digital solutions for businesses working on the front line of global trade. So these are exporters, importers, freight forwarders, and customs brokers. And what we do for them is we create software solutions that help these businesses drive their productivity, increase connectivity with the supply chain, and enhance visibility of their products as they move through the supply chain. So more specifically, our solutions are used to streamline the back office operations of these businesses. And so for majority of businesses, international trade is a real headache. And for instance, shipping a container of goods from New Zealand to China could involve the preparation of up to 10 to 20 documents that typically need to be shared with around about 10 parties. There's a lot of work and a lot of sharing of information. And in some cases, these physical documents need to be couriered so that goods can be cleared through customs. And so our systems help eliminate that. So it helps speed up trade and eliminate cost. And so it works by our solutions capture data at source, so inside of the company's systems, help them correctly format that data into shipping documents, and then allow the operators to securely share that data out with their supply chain partners, which typically include shipping lines, ports, banks, insurance companies, and then the border agencies, being customs and biosecurity. And this is what makes Trade Window different. We're a sector-neutral player connecting up the siloed commercial, logistics, banking, and government systems that already exist across global supply chains. We offer a fairly broad suite of solutions that we're continuously updating and converging over the next few years. And we're calling this a global trade platform. So essentially it's a single platform from which our customers can conduct all of their international trade activities, including compliance, bookings, border clearance. Then in terms of what we don't do, we don't actually provide the freight forwarding and customs brokering services ourselves. Rather, we're providing the software for those businesses to do their job more efficiently.
Okay, interesting. You've been with the company, is it about 3 years now? Was there anything that you weren't expecting when you joined them?
Yeah, I've been with the company from pretty close to the start, and Trade Window has only been in existence for 44 months. So we're a young company. In terms of what didn't I expect, I underestimated what can be achieved in such a short amount of time with an experienced and focused team. And so to provide some context of what we've done in Trade Window's short history, we've built Cube, which is our cornerstone product. So this is a blockchain-based platform used by some of New Zealand's largest exporters. We've acquired and integrated 6 businesses. We've built a customer base of over 450 leading exporters, importers, freight forwarders, and customs brokers. We've established a team of over 100 subject matter experts who are located across New Zealand, Australia, Philippines, Indonesia, and Singapore. And then late last year, we listed on the NZX. In terms of, you know, I feel fortunate to have been offered a seat on a rocket ship. And it's really the opportunity working with a great team with really smart, engaged, and passionate people. For me, this is what makes Trade Window such a great place to work. And global trade is an enormous problem to solve. There's really no shortage of challenging work.
I will bet. Yeah. I mean, when you look at joining a company that is still so young, you know, when you say, you know, you came in basically from the get-go, is it risky? Does it give you pause when you're so high up in your career to jump in on something that's a bit of an unknown at the time?
Yeah, I've always had a pretty high tolerance for risk, but what I could see was that it was a fantastic concept and it had the right people. And that's what gave me the confidence. And then as a group, what I found that we were always challenging the way things were done. And it's actually become a value in the company of, we say, challenging the definition of possible. And so that remains in the business. We're always reimagining how things can be done, from product innovation through to even how we finance the business. So that's what makes it really exciting.
Yeah, and you mentioned before about, you know, working on this through a challenging time. I think we've all seen in the last couple of years COVID supply problems, ports backing up. Some of the news pictures I saw of various ports around the world were really intense, ships everywhere. We've suddenly seen the supply chain in a way that exposes how complicated it can be and how many moving parts there are. I think it was easy to take for granted when it was just in the background moving seamlessly. I mean, working through all of these COVID disruptions, how difficult was that for your company?
Yeah, when COVID first hit in early 2020, we initially thought we were going to be in for a really rough ride. And however, we found that the disruptions in the global supply chain actually provided tailwinds for the adoption of our solutions and digital trade as a whole. In fact, I recently read in a McKinsey & Company report that COVID has helped accelerate digital transformation plans of businesses across APAC by up to 10 years. So it's really has been a driving force behind the adoption of technology. And so many of the freight forwarders and exporters that we deal with, they run their businesses using manual paper-based processes which require operators to be on site. And so the lockdowns really adversely affected their businesses. Since COVID and the lockdowns, many of these exporters and freight forwarders have been motivated to go on that digital transformation to reduce their overheads, enable staff to work remotely, and just build more resilience into their operating model. And our solutions help them achieve all of these three outcomes. And so, to provide you with some specifics on, you know, the value that a customer received, one of our customers, Greenlea Premier Meats, they've reported that they can increase the speed of creating their export documentation by 4 times. There's 9 times reduction in errors, 100% paperless for their trading up to the USA, and 37% in reduction of courier costs by eliminating the need for sending paper, and then 33% increase in day-to-day efficiency in their export operations. And then further to our customers, post-COVID, we've seen governments around the world more motivated to replace these paper-based border clearance processes with digital solutions. And we're pretty excited by what that will mean for New Zealand. It creates a more efficient export sector, more robust economy, and therefore being able to navigate the volatility in the global economy going forward.
Yeah, and you mentioned there about moving on from the old paper-based systems, which I think it clearly is the way of the future. The flip side, of course, is you can't hack paper. So COVID, obviously, probably not the only challenge for a business like yours. Things like data security must also be very important. How do you safeguard that?
Absolutely. Data security is critical. And that's why we've got an expert on the team, so Dr. Guy Kloss, who's our CTO. He's established industry best practice in the way we operate and protect data. And so from very close to the start, we've been ISO 27001 certified. So this is your golden standard in terms of data security. And we do a lot of testing in our development, and we have regular penetration tests on our systems, which are conducted by external parties. In terms of physical security of the servers, that's really important, and that's why we use reputable data centers, including AWS and Microsoft Azure. Our solutions encrypt our customers' data both in transit and in storage, so it's very safe. And then in terms of our production system, we restrict access to it, so we don't have any developers touching it or support team members touching it while it's live. And then the other part is prevention is key. And so we spend a lot of time upskilling the staff and making them aware of data safety practices.
Yeah, I imagine that's very important. All right, let's jump into because I see we're already getting at least one question focusing on the money, and our Sharesies investors are very focused on the money, and fair enough too. Last month, you announced a $10 million capital raise. So tell me about that and why you did it.
Sure. Well, TradeWindow is focused on becoming a global business. And so this requires further investment, building capabilities, and also continuously improving our software to stay one step ahead of the competition. So with regard to the building the capability, we're hiring more sales, customer success, product, and development experts. We're also investing in the digital tools that will help automate the sales and marketing and support processes so we can scale in a more efficient way. Along a similar vein, we're also investing in an ERP system. So this is the IT backbone, the financial backbone of the business. And that's to scale our back office operations, run more efficiently, and then future-proof the business as we move into new markets. With regard to continuously improving our software, what we're doing is we're converging our acquired pieces of software and our proprietary software into a single global trade platform. And this will be happening over the next few years. And part of that, we're doing continued research and development and making sure that, as I said at the start, making sure we're one step ahead of the competition. And then the final piece of our investment is continuing to build out our sales agency network that will help us enter into new markets, such as we're doing up in Asia right now.
Yeah, it's not a small amount of money, but $10 million in terms of how capital raises go is somewhat small. And then that's like quite a lot that you are expecting to get done for that. Do you think there'll be any more capital raises in the future?
I can't say at this stage, but we do have our own revenue. So we're not entirely reliant on external capital. So a lot of it is self-funded.
Interesting stuff. And of course, part of that, you mentioned there about software that you acquire. You have just acquired Refida. That deal has gone unconditional. So tell me more about that, what they do and how this acquisition will help your business.
Yeah, so we're really excited about the Refida acquisition. It complements the investment we've already made with Assure. And so this is TradeWindow's proprietary supply chain traceability solution. And supply chain traceability or transparency is becoming increasingly important for a number of reasons. Consumers want to know the origin of the products they buy. And that's whether it's the food they eat, the clothes they wear. Consumers want to ensure that the goods they're purchasing are legitimate, but then also produced in a way that matches their values. And then tied to this, businesses are needing solutions to support their ESG reporting requirements. And so we can do that with the combination of Refida and Assure. And further to this, supply chain traceability is important for food safety, compliance purposes. In some jurisdictions where goods are exported to, the border agencies require evidence of the chain of custody of the goods as they've moved through the supply chain, and we're able to capture that with those products. And in addition, we're starting to see traceability data being used in new ways, such as feeding into the credit scoring to access finance. Then in terms of proving out marketing claims, so making sure they're authentic, our solutions, both Refida and Assure, can capture data at multiple sources across the supply chain. And so this might be capturing data about the quality of the produce at the point of cultivation, could be the shipping events, could be the loading of the containers, through to the monitoring of the temperature while they're in transit. So these are all key data points about proving out the authenticity of a product. And so this data set, or at least the pertinent parts of it, can be accessed by consumers by scanning, typically by scanning a QR code attached to the product itself or the packaging. And it's this data-driven storytelling which can help New Zealand exporters differentiate their products. And we see the adoption of this technology is going to play a really important role in achieving the government's aims of moving the focus of the primary industry in particular for the exports from volume to value. And to give you a more specific example, a New Zealand meat exporter could use Refida or Assure to create an immutable audit trail to capture multiple data points along the supply chain to support their brand claims that their product is premium, grass-fed, sustainably farmed beef from Southland.
Yeah, it's interesting there that you mention ESG, which I'm sure most people are across, but just for anyone who isn't, ESG stands for environmental, social, and corporate governance. It's basically when we talk about ethical concerns, that's usually what we're referring to. And it is a hugely growing area. I mean, we are seeing things like the mandating of climate impact reporting for companies. So do you think as ESG becomes more and more of a concern to companies, both in terms of proving things to their investors and in terms of proving things to their customers, do you think that's going to be an opportunity for your business?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're already seeing many of our customers interested in finding ways of supporting their ESG claims or capturing data for ESG reporting. And it's such a key part of brands now and making sure that the claims that they're making about their sustainability practices or environmental practices are legitimate. And so, yeah, I see it being a big opportunity.
You've been pushing more into Asia recently as well, particularly Southeast Asia. There's been some deals in the Philippines. Why is that area important to your business?
You know, the ASEAN region is actually New Zealand's fourth largest trading partner with regard to two-way trade. It's worth $19 billion. It's a region of growing importance for the New Zealand economy. Trade over the last 12 years has grown by 66%. And we anticipate countries across this region are going to begin to represent a larger proportion of trade as the population up there grows wealthier. They're likely to increase demand for New Zealand produced goods, including premium meat, dairy, seafood products. The Philippines is a really attractive market for a number of reasons. And it is two-way trade with double that of New Zealand's. It's got a thriving goods export sector that includes manufacturing, horticulture, and seafood. And then we're also working in collaboration up there with our local partner, Intercommerce, who's an established software vendor up there. And through that, we'll get an exposure to a large and growing market. Then further to the Philippines and Intercommerce, we recently appointed another partner in Thailand. And so Thailand is enormous in terms of the market opportunity. Two-way trade in Thailand is worth approximately $700
billion. All right. Well, I mean, part of your role is pushing that offshore expansion, right? So what are the realities of how that works and how do you get those deals rolling? What's involved?
Yeah, that's right. Our focus, as I mentioned, is becoming a global software business. So it means spending a lot of time traveling. And so far this year, I've spent more time in hotels than in my own home. And the reality is that it's long time away from friends and family. But it's on the flip side, it's hugely rewarding when your efforts culminate in winning a new customer or a new partner. It's because these initial deals in a new market, they're really critical for establishing a reference point from which you can win more deals. It snowballs from there. So typically the first deal is the hardest to win. Over the past few years, we've been doing a lot of business over Zoom, which has been great for staying connected with customers and partners while we haven't been able to travel. But despite the convenience that it brings, nothing beats meeting in person. You just can't build the same level of rapport and trust over Zoom. Our market entry approach, it varies for each market. And we take into account of the cultural differences, language, and the regulatory environment. So if I provide some specific examples, in Australia, we're taking an approach that's actually similar to New Zealand. Culturally, it's similar. What we did there was we acquired a local business that provided a foundation of customers, which we've been able to build upon. In contrast, Singapore entry into the market has served as a beachhead into the wider ASEAN region. So we recognized early that countries in this region it's very different, and therefore we decided the best way to go about growth in this area is partnering with established players. And so we look to partner with these software vendors that have established relationships with the local trade ecosystem, that's the exporters and the importers and freight forwarders, customs brokers, but importantly also with the border agencies, so with the government. And then in terms of, we found getting deals rolling in Asia comes down to establishing trusted relationships. And so this takes an investment of time. It's all about building credibility. And being a publicly listed business has helped a lot in this regard. We found it's much easier to open doors since we've done that. It's easier in a sense because customers and partners that don't know us are able to access information that's publicly available for them to do their due diligence and see that we're legitimate. The transparency and oversight that the independent directors bring, it, it brings a lot of reassurance to these customers and partners that we're interested in establishing long-term trusted relationships.
That's interesting that being listed actually makes a difference there. And like you say, I mean, I think that those face-to-face conversations, they're huge in business and for establishing that level of trust that is so important, like you say. I mean, now that we're seeing border restrictions lift, travel coming back, do you have and a certain amount of FaceTime that you aim for, or is it you do you wing it a bit more than that? What's it like?
It's a case by case basis, but I do recognise that when we're early in establishing a relationship, it does take quite a bit of time, and there's cultural differences as well. And so I found that in Asia, it does take flying to see the partners and spending FaceTime with them, and that could be days or weeks. Really, just depends on the culture.
Okay, well, I will just remind those who are watching now that drop those questions in. I see some really good questions dropping in already. And upvote the ones that you want me to ask first, so I know what are the most burning questions for you guys, and we can make sure to get those at the top of the list. While you do that, though, and another question, last one from me, what do you think, highlight and lowlight for the next 12 months ahead?
Yeah, so highlights for the next 12 months, it's got to be ramping up our business across Asia. I'm really excited about the opportunities in this region, not only for us, but for our customers in New Zealand and Australia. So I believe that we can play a big role in streamlining trade between these Australasian businesses and Asian counterparts. In terms of lowlights, I'm not sure I have any. I'm sure we'll have challenges along the way, but I'm confident that we can overcome any of these with the depth of talent that I've got in the Trade Window team.
Love it. Feeling positive.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, speaking of all the upvotes now, I'm going to have to jump into this one that is getting the most votes. David says, your COO has just resigned. If the position was necessary, why isn't he being replaced? That's a spicy one to start with, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got a depth of talent in our team. We have recently been building out the middle layer of the business, and so we feel right now that we've got the right amount of capability. We'll revisit that again in the future, but yeah, right at this moment we're confident with the team that we've got.
Do you think it'll have much of an impact on the business?
Gavin's a star performer, and we're sorry to lose him, but I think with the, as I say, the depth of talent we've got there, we've got the right people in the right places to continue on without any disruption.
Now, this one is another great question. Who are your major competitors, and what advantage does Trade Window have over them?
Yeah, well, in terms of, I'll flip the question around, and is what are our major differences? And I highlighted those in one of the earlier questions. We're a sector neutral player, and what we do is we connect up what we call the four silos of global supply chain. So this is commercial data, logistics data, financial data or banking, inclusive insurance, and then government. And what we've got is other solutions that focus on just a niche within each of those. So if we look at one that's in the logistics sector, you've got WiseTech Global. So they're a freight forwarding platform, but that's just in that niche of logistics. Similarly, you have TradeLens, and so they are just in the logistics space. And then there's a few different point solutions out there that are dealing with traceability. It's a fairly fragmented market. But what we're doing is providing a more comprehensive solution for our customers.
Okay, and this one from Chris, focused on the money, very important. Do you have a forecast for future dividends?
We're a growth company right now, and we don't anticipate issuing dividends. So it's really about reinvestment into future growth at this point in time.
Interesting. So any investors should be probably more hoping for capital gain.
Absolutely.
This one, again, a great question from David. You are growing partly through acquisitions. Who would be interested in acquiring you?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Possibly a bigger player that's in the logistics sector or supply chain software. So there are some global companies out there that have adjacent interests. So on the US listed businesses, you look at the likes of E2Open, a very big company and play in an adjacent space. The likes of, say, WiseTech Global, a bigger ASX listed business. So it could be one of those players that would look to acquire us. But in terms of our acquisition strategy, it's really a pragmatic one. Where we've seen an opportunity to either buy into a market position that would take years to build, we've done so, because it means that we have customers that we can continue on the journey with and provide them more value-add solutions in due course. Or otherwise, with the likes of Refida, where they've got an adjacent piece of technology that's already on our product roadmap, and it becomes more of a build versus buy decision. And it's much more cost effective and strategic to buy in rather than build it ourselves.
Yeah, speaking of your acquisition strategy there, I mean, do you have any other sort of gaps in the markets that you're reaching or the technology that you have where you might be looking for more acquisitions?
It's always a consideration in moving into new markets. And so it's establishing those foundational customers in a new country can take time, particularly if you're dealing with larger businesses. So large enterprise sales cycle, you're looking anywhere between 9 to 12 months for winning each deal. So it does become quite a pragmatic and fast way of building up market share.
All right, this one from Peter has shot up in the votes, so that's obviously an important one to people. And basically, coming back to the staff issues we were talking before, the business seems pretty top-heavy board-wise and executive team-wise compared to current revenue and projections. Is there a significantly conservative forecast philosophy?
In terms of the team, what we've decided is to have a full management team right from the start. If you're wanting to scale out a global business, you need the expertise in place to hit the ground running. The window of opportunity for us won't be open for a long period, and therefore we need people who are capable to help us scale up the business quickly. In terms of the board, we have three independent directors on there, and so they're there to provide the oversight for our shareholders. We made sure that we had a blend of skills and experience that we needed to scale the business up into a global business and with knowledge of supply chain. So Alistair McLeod, he's also the chair of Napier Port, knows supply chain well. Likewise, Diana Pukitapu, who's also Napier Port, comes from an accounting background. And then we've also got Phil Norman, who is a veteran of the New Zealand software sector, having been the inaugural chairman of Xero.
Okay, this one also a popular question. Can we expect more capital raises in the near future, and for what reasons? It's important for smaller investors as share dilution occurs and need to be aware that it might be an ongoing investment requirement. Thank you very much for your time, Andrew. And Francis, thank you very much for asking so politely. What do you reckon, Andrew?
Yeah, in terms of further capital raises, we don't have any on the horizon at this point in time. Notwithstanding, if opportunities come up where we need to raise capital to finance an acquisition, that is something that we wouldn't have in our plans. So at this point, it's likely that there would be capital raises within the near term, being say 12 months to fund an acquisition if it were to come up.
Okay. And this one from Vanessa. Brexit seems to have hugely increased the complexity of imports, exports between UK and Europe. I'd say that's putting it mildly, seeing some of the news reports. Any opportunities for Trade Window there? Are you looking at global expansion?
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, global expansion is our focus. So yeah, we'll be pushing hard into Australia and Asia as our initial focus, and then move out from there.
If you were looking at UK, Europe, you know, what sort of timeline are you looking at there?
It's not in our near-term focus. So when I say near-term, I'm talking 12 months. Notwithstanding, we continue to monitor what's going on in different parts of the world, and we feel that we've got our hands full right now with what we're doing in Australia and Asia. There's still a lot of wins to be had there. But certainly we keep an eye on what's going on in the UK and EU.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned before that Asia was a key market for you. What sort of areas are you focusing on there? And are there any others that are on your radar that you're hoping to push into next?
Yeah, so the key areas in Asia, it's that ASEAN region. The focus right now is ramping up in Philippines, Thailand, as I mentioned before. Indonesia presents a great opportunity, likewise does Malaysia. Beyond that area, we see US presents great opportunity. With the Refida acquisition, they've come with customers in either USA and LATAM. So they have a customer in Colombia. And so we see South America as an opportunity as well. And we had flagged that last year in our listing profile when we went onto the NZX. We'd already done some preliminary market entry studies into Chile.
Well, I can't wait to see what's next for you guys. That's all the questions. So thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. And a big thank you to Andrew for joining us. Really appreciate your time and your insights into your business there. Now, do keep an eye on the usual Sharesies social channels for news on next week's episode. Until next time, enjoy the rest of your week. Do stay safe.
For more info, visit sharesies.co.nz or look us up on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.